say can be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. Time eastbound just like on Bandit Run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Football Absurdity Podcast. My name is Jeff Crisco, and I'm here again, once again, as always, with Mike Valverde. Mike, how are you doing today? You're going to say something about how it's nice and cool in your nice house, that you never have to leave, while I was in a car today all day. So how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm actually doing pretty well. In fact, I'm doing so well that I'm enjoying my hot take on Jimmy Graham. And the fact that he's moving up to where I said he was going to be as the third tight end taken, which you didn't like at all, if I recall correctly.
So, first of all, I watched the touchdown that he scored today, the first touchdown in the first or in the second preseason game. It was Steelers and Green Bay. And I was watching the replay because I got home a little bit late and I wanted to see. First of all, I put it on because I was like, oh, if Big Ben misses his time, I want to see how Mason Rudolph looks. And first play, literally the first play was a pick six. But then I was watching it and I go, okay, they get into the red zone. It's, I think, third and five from like the 15, I want to say. And I hear the announcer say, oh, they're subbing out Lance Kendricks for Geronimo Allison. I'm like, oh yeah. Oh baby. Geronimo Allison. He's going to be in on this. This is something of value is going to happen on this play. All right. Something actionable is going to happen. They're going to go to Geronimo. Okay. They threw a touchdown to Jimmy Graham. You know what? Preseason is pointless. This is dumb. It doesn't mean anything. Nothing of value happened here.
I like that reasoning. That makes a lot of sense considering it's preseason, but guess what? You're going to have to get used to it because that's what's going to happen during the regular season as well.
Sure. Five or six games, he'll catch a touchdown. That's fine. I'll get used to that one-third to 40% of the time. But that's all he's going to do. Okay. But anyways, all right, folks. This is episode 10 of the Football Absurdity Podcast, and today we're going to be taking a look at the AFC East and the NFC East, like we've done for the last couple episodes, couple sleepers, breakouts, and busts from each team through the divisions before we wrap up next week with the AFC and NFC South. Before we get started on that, just want to remind everyone of the social medias. F-Ball Absurdity is the website. I'm JM Crisco. Mike is RFL Red Zone. We still have beer sheets on the website, footballabsurdity.com. Beer sheets are a 100% fully customizable fantasy football cheat sheet that gets updated weekly. Evan Hoovler also updated his auction ranks on Wednesday, the 14th. I'm sorry, I know days. Tuesday, the 14th. He got those updated. Those are available on the top bar drop down. And we are getting through our team previews, our player profiles. And tomorrow we're going to drop our ranks. Finally, we're going to have some ranks from the team coming out there. But before we get started again with the AFC and NFC East, we're going to do another round of draft pick your poison. This round is fourth round wide receivers. These are guys drafted in the fourth round by fantasy football calculator average draft position. This is in a standard scoring league. There are six guys taken in the fourth round that play wide receiver. We have Amari Cooper of your Oakland, soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders, Juju Smith-Schuster of the Steelers, Brandon Cooks of the formerly of the Saints, formerly of the Patriots, currently of the Rams. I didn't copy and paste the teams, and I had to delay to remember what team he was on this year. Demaryius Thomas of the Broncos, Larry Fitzgerald of the Cardinals, and Josh Gordon of the suspended list for the Cleveland Browns. So, Mike, there's six guys there, all going in the fourth round. It's your through three rounds. You've got a couple running backs, a wide receiver, maybe a couple wide receivers, maybe a running back, but you're ready. It's fourth round. All right. You're going to take one of these wide receivers. Who are you taking?
Well, in a PPR league, I would have to take Larry Fitzgerald because
easy.
He's especially going at one of the last picks in the fourth round. I'd take him early in the fourth round. I'd take him where Amari Cooper is at 4-1. So he's going to catch 100 balls, probably, 1,100 yards and catch five touchdowns. So what am I worried about here? You know, he's going to be in my lineup every week. So boom, there you go.
He's a steady Eddie. And just to your point, I looked it up in PPR. He is in a 12-team league in the end of the third round. So you're right on there with the consensus on Larry Fitzgerald. And that guy's a machine. I mean, there's nothing to say for Larry Fitzgerald. You wind him up in 90 and 1,000, 85 and 1,100, somewhere in that ballpark, and he goes. You know, touchdowns come and go. I don't like to talk about touchdowns because, you know, Julio Jones showed last year. You got 1,400 yards and 3 touchdowns. They're kind of fluky. You ready for my guy?
Oh, God. I'm hoping it's Juju Smith-Schuster. I can talk.
It's not a team's number 2 wide receiver. It is a team's number 1 wide receiver. This wide receiver, I made a tweet last summer that I had pinned to my profile, and I looked very smart, except for 1 week last season. And it was that this player is not a wide receiver 1 where he's being drafted. And drafting him that way is just wishcrafting. But I did some research, crunched some numbers, took a look at some trends, and I am on board with the Amari Cooper bounce back train. Amari Cooper in the 4th round, and that is a steal. And here's why. Where do you want me to start? Do you want me to start with Amari Cooper? Or do you want me to start with John Gruden?
My track has already been derailed because you mentioned Amari Cooper, but I'm with you. Whatever direction you want to take this, I'm ready because I got my popcorn and if you could prove to me why Amari Cooper is worth this pick, I'm all invested.
All right, so I'm going to recount his disastrous 2017 campaign that had everybody talking about how he was a bust. Now he started off very slow. He had I'm not going to look at the stats. I'm just going to say he had 4 yards within the first 3 games. Just guessing there. And I'm not far off. He had three games out of his first 5 with 6 yards, 9 yards, and 8 yards. 2 out of his last 4, he had 9 yards and 0 yards. So you're going, Jeff, what the heck? Why is this the guy that you're taking in the 4th round? He was a bust last year. Well, Amari Cooper, he has the draft pedigree. He is a good football player. But last season, he missed a handful of games. Derek Carr was really inconsistent. He was back to throwing a ton of interceptions, not a lot of touchdowns for a first time in his career. And Amari Cooper had the worst catch rate of his career, and it was 13% lower than the year before. To me, and Derek Carr and Amari Cooper have both said that Cooper was more injured last year than he let on, which that's a trope, whatever. But first year in the league, 78 receptions, 1,000 yards, 6 scores. Second year in the league, 83 receptions, 1,150 yards, 5 touchdowns. Last year, 680 yards and 7 touchdowns. Now, I'm just going to go on the track record that he established the first couple of years in the league where you wind him up. He's, let's say, 75 and 1,000 and 5 scores. But the funny thing about last year, he scored more touchdowns than he did before. He actually had a better mind meld with Derek Carr in the red zone than he had in the previous couple of years, which was the big problem. My big research last year was I found that Amari Cooper had a huge red zone problem until last year. So it's ironic that it was the worst year of his career by fantasy football measurements. Now, he had about a third of his yards in 1 game against the Chiefs. But I believe in the bounce back. I believe in the talent. He doesn't have the best hands, but at the same time, he posted 2,200 yards combined in his first 2 seasons with those bad hands. He could still catch the ball enough. And the big reason that I believe in the bounce back is his new coach, John Gruden. Now, Gruden keeps talking like he wants to run the football, ground and pound, take it back to 1998. Everybody's laughing at him for it, right? I mean, I'm sure you've had a chuckle about his wanting to take it back to 1988 or 1998.
I can understand that too, because look who he has as his running backs. You know,
he's got some bowling balls.
Exactly. So why not take it back a few years? He's got the weapons for it.
I'll tell you why. Because he has never played like that. He has never coached like that. every single number one wide receiver that John Gruden was the head coach for has gone for at least 1,000 yards. The average wide receiver one season for a John Gruden wide receiver is 1,145 yards. They average 8 touchdowns a year. If he is just an average John Gruden wide receiver one, his fantasy points will put him roughly between Marvin Jones, wide receiver 5 last year, and AJ Green, wide receiver 7. Last year was a down year for wide receivers, but at the same time, just an average John Gruden year because he peppers his wide receiver one with targets. Just absolutely, it rains down. Amari Cooper's going to need an umbrella to stop all these balls, which, by the way, might work better to catch them than his hands catch them in the umbrella. But he's just going to be littered with targets, and there's nowhere else for him to go. I do not believe in 33-year-old Jordy Nelson off of a leg injury being the wide receiver one for this team. I don't believe Martavis Bryant, who, you know, couldn't get his head screwed on straight with an entire tool set and step-by-step directions. You know, he had an IKEA set, IKEA instructions to put his head on straight. He still wouldn't figure it out. I don't believe there's any threat to his targets. Jared Cook. I mean, that's all you have to say. His competition for targets are Cook, 1,000-year-old Jordy Nelson, and Martavis Bryant, who's too busy off getting high to learn the playbook. The running backs don't catch balls. The tight ends aren't throwing balls, but they can't catch them. And the other wide receivers are not great. He's going to be the only game in town. He's a talented wide receiver. He has the pedigree. He showed it his first 2 years in the league. And I think finally he's going to be a wide receiver one. And he's coming at a 4th round prize.
And you're absolutely wrong. I respect the fact about what you're saying about John Gruden, and his history has definitely shown what you're saying as far as a definitive proof. But I think Jordy Nelson is that guy, and I think that John Gruden is talking up Amari Cooper like they were talking up C.J. Spiller, to throw a distraction on the field. Plus the fact that the last 3 seasons prior to this one, you had what Richard Sherman called a sorry-ass receiver and Michael Crabtree outperforming Amari Cooper. So I just have a hard time understanding where Amari Cooper, who I've never thought was a number one receiver from day one, is now the top receiver in Oakland.
I mean, that's fine. That was under another coaching regime. Who spread the ball around. And like you said yourself, Michael Crabtree is gone. Michael Crabtree was a possession receiver. Amari Cooper was the deep threat. And to your point, he was getting targets funneled away from him to Michael Crabtree. And he put up 2,200 yards combined in his first 2 seasons.
A lot of those were huge games. If you look through his daily weekly charts, you're going to see a lot of MIA games. And like he did last year, he 144 yards in a couple games. Well, that's going to add up. But if you look overall, there's no consistency there whatsoever.
I'm looking at his... Okay, he does have bombs. You're correct. Well, he had bombs his rookie year. He had bombs last year. His second year, he had... a couple duds, three, four duds, but I believe in it. I believe in the talent. I believe in the bounce back. Junk wide receivers don't have, 500 plus yard games his first season. 400 plus yard games, his sophomore year. And even last year, he put up 325 yards in 2 games. So yep. I believe in the bounce back. I believe in the talent. I believe in the player. Agree to disagree, because that's not what we're here to talk about today. You can take Larry Fitzgerald, old man Larry Fitzgerald. You can take him out.
Geriatric
Larry Fitz. You can take him to the retirement community. I'll be out in the clubs with the young hotness, Amari Cooper. You know, we'll be killing it together. And you and Larry Fitzgerald can have, you know, your Werther's originals and your butterscotches, and he can talk about what it was like in World War One and all that good stuff. But
back in 1998.
Back in 1998, yeah. John Gruden should call Larry Fitzgerald to ask him what it was like playing back in 1998. Anyways, all right, so we're going to get off to the NFC East we'll start with today, and then we'll switch to the AFC East. We'll go back and forth. And Mike, I'll let you go first with your guys. So who are you starting with in the NFC East today?
So we're going to go alphabetic order again, and we're going to go with the Dallas Cowboys. Breakout, I have Allen Hurns, and this is why I believe he's going to break out. In 2015, he caught 64 passes for 1,031 yards and 10 touchdowns. So the talent is there. He's able to do it. That's been established. Even though 2016, 2017, he kind of, it didn't look like he was going to do much. But I think 2018, we're going to see some 2015 numbers. So two things right here. The Cowboys will have to throw the ball to keep EE healthy. So targets are going to be had. There's not really much there on the team that's going to take away the volume that will be available for him. And another thing that I like about him is I think he has breakout written all over him. As shown in by his potential and certain games he has blown up in the last three seasons. The question that I'm having a hard time with is, it's a big question, but it's sort of like touchdowns. You can't really predict it. And that is, can he stay healthy? And, you know, he's missed games in each of his last three years, but he's possibly the only playmaking receiver on the team. Tavon Austin is there, but he's no legitimate wide receiver. And the remaining options are Cole Beasley and Terrence Williams.
Wrong. Michael Gallup, baby.
I haven't got there yet.
Okay, you said those were the remaining options.
Good interjection. Good interjection.
All right.
And the reason I said no remaining options for Michael Gallup, because I'm a big Michael Gallup fan myself, is,
can you hear that?
I like it. I like
it. Applause for Michael Gallup. All right.
And but he's a rookie, so we have no idea what, if he's legitimate or if he's Cole Beasley, you know. So that's why I put him under there as a legitimate receiver, just because it's a unknown.
Did you watch the first preseason game? He ran a route so pretty that Jimmy Ward just stopped on the field. And just let him run right past him. He was so in awe. He was like, you know what? That route's beautiful. I'm going to let you have this.
I'll just let you have this one.
Yeah, I'll just let you have. He's like, you know what? This one's on me. There you go, Mike.
Welcome to the league, Brooke.
Yeah, he's like, welcome to the league. He did it wrong. He said, welcome to the league. Congratulations on your touchdown. So personally, I'm on the Gallup train. I love Michael Gallup, but I can see Allen Hurns being that player. It's right now, it's a toss-up between who it's going to be. It's basically down to your personal preferences. So, if we're drafting in a league together, we'll just have to have a friendly nod to each other while you take Allen Hurns and I take Michael Gallup. So, Michael Gallup, if he stays fully healthy, where do you think he ends up? Top 24, top 20, top 15? We'll just go standard scoring to make it easier.
Well, I definitely think that he's going to be a top 25 receiver just because the volume is going to be there for him as well. And I'm a big fan on Gallup. And to be honest with you, I can see Gallup surpassing Allen Hurns production and finishing as the number one receiver on the Cowboys.
Well, that won't be hard because Allen Hurns is going to play like 8 games. So.
Yeah, exactly. He's definitely his injury history is something to be concerned about.
Yes, sir. All right. Who do you got next? Sleeper, bust? Where are we going next?
So since we're talking about him, Michael Gallup as my sleeper pick.
Yeah, baby.
When you come into the league as a rookie, the one thing that you just desperately want is an opportunity. And I think that he has that in bunches coming in as a Dallas receiver. I think they're going to just open the door for him and let him do what he can do. And as we talked about all as well, can Allen Hurns stay healthy? And if he can't, and then Gallup is going to usurp and become that number one receiver. I think even if Allen Hurns stays healthy for 16 games, I think there's still an opportunity for Gallup to become the number one receiver on the Dallas Cowboys. A little back history on Gallup. He was drafted in the third round from Colorado State, where he had 21 touchdowns in two seasons. Ooh, so
is that a lot?
That's a little bit. That's a little bit. And I love his blend of size, speed, and athleticism. The biggest question, though, that I have for him is going the transition from the NFL to transition from Colorado State to the NFL. And even though he had a great route run, he still needs to do that on a more consistent basis. His route running isn't as polished as NFL standards would like. But he's not so unpolished where he's a Laquan Treadwell type of guy. And then the third concern I have is the Cowboys are going to be a running team. They're just going to have to run because they don't have the weapons to throw the ball very well, or have a quarterback. That's going to be my bust. Dak Prescott. Unless you have anything else to say about Michael Gallup, I'll move on to Prescott.
No, Michael, the only thing I have to say is that when I was watching Michael Gallup, I saw Anquan Boldin, and then I was like, I wonder if anybody else made this comparison. It was his college head coach made the same comparison. So
wow.
It felt pretty apt.
Yeah. And I agree with you there too. He's a type that is built like that and then going to catch the ball. And he's very surprising because you don't see someone like that with his type of build that's going to be able to make defenders miss like Anquan Boldin did when in his heyday. And he's the same kind of player that is going to catch the ball. It's a little big, but it's going to be making players miss and racking up a lot of yak.
Yes, sir. All right. So you're bust. So you've got a breakout wide receiver, a sleeper wide receiver, but a bust quarterback, huh?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? So how does that work out, right?
How does that work out?
Basically, it works out because the only other player really that could be a bust would be Ezekiel Elliott, and I ain't going to see that happening. So,
fair enough.
So basically, yeah, I was limited, and Dak Prescott, you know, he had a great rookie year, but went downhill. He lost nearly 7 points off his completion percentage and 3,000 yards to go along with it. So by taking away 7 points off his completion percentage, he lost nearly 3,000 yards passing in his second season. Not helping was his drop in yards per completion, which was just under 7 yards per catch. So what's happening is that when he's throwing the ball, it's not going a long way. It's going short distances, and you can't gain yards and move the ball downfield if your quarterback is throwing, you know, 5 yards per pass play. It's got to go farther than that to rack up those points. Which is interesting is the fact that not only is he throwing short passes, but in his rookie season, he only threw 4 interceptions. Well, he tripled that plus one and threw 13 last season. So his short passes and throwing interceptions are just double trouble. And as mentioned with Hurns, his offensive selections are not there. It's not like he can rely on even Allen Hurns is not a threat to a defensive coordinator. So there's no big name out there that's going to take defenders away. They can probably play how they want and basically probably stack the box and try to make Dak Prescott throw. And if he's only throwing 5 yards or it's an interception, then there's big trouble. So I would void Dak Prescott completely.
All right. So I have a rebuttal to that because my article for the website, Sleeper Breakout Bust for the Cowboys, let me run it down for you real quick. Sleeper, Michael Gallup. Correct. We are both on the same page there. Bust, Allen Hurns, can't stay healthy. Bounce back, breakout, Dak Prescott, what? Okay. So here's my deal. Fancy little app I love to use called the RotoViz Splits app. You can go in, you can see what happened by different sets of criteria. Last season, and I owned Dak Prescott last year, so I saw exactly what was going on. So last year, before Ezekiel Elliott went down with this suspension, Dak Prescott was riding high. He was a top three, top four quarterback in the league with Ezekiel Elliott there to take pressure off of him passing. Once Ezekiel Elliott was gone and serving his suspension, things just fell apart for Dak. So what I did was I pulled up the RotoViz app because this was anecdotal and I wanted to make sure that I was correct. With Zeke out of the lineup last year, Dak's scoring in fantasy football went from 22.82 fantasy points. Now they do 5 points per touchdown, kind of split the difference between 4 point and 6 point touchdown, but it's neither here nor there. It dropped down to 15.47 fantasy points per game. He threw the whole offense shrunk because he was throwing the ball five times less a game. He was throwing more interceptions. He was throwing fewer touchdowns. And all of his bad juju that you were talking about, all of that came without Zeke on the field. Well, Zeke's back. So that's why I think personally he's going to be a great value.
Well, you do have a point there. Ezekiel Elliott played his whole rookie season and Dak Prescott played well. And then all the way up to that suspension, he was playing well. Now, I don't know once he came back what those numbers look like. Maybe you remember, but
they were not great when he came back because Dak had just completely fallen apart. But to your point, he is missing, I think it was something like 40% of all his targets from his career between Dez and Jason Witten. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how he does without the safety blankets there for him, even though his splits with and without Dak were exactly, or without with and without Dez were exactly the same. So, all right, we'll move on to my first team in the AFC East. That will be the Buffalo Bills of Buffalo and Niagara Falls sometimes. My bust. We talked about him before on the podcast. Pretty straight line to what we were talking about before to now, LeSean McCoy. I won't belabor the point that I made before, but basically he's passed 2,600 carries. The last five backs to pass 2,600 carries were no slouches. They were Adrian Peterson, Steven Jackson, Frank Gore, LaDainian Tomlinson, and Matt Forte. You may know them from their current for LaDainian Tomlinson, but future for the rest of them, Hall of Fame plaques. After they crossed the 2,600 carry threshold, they had careers that were eerily similar to Joique Bell's 2013 campaign. They averaged about 1,100 yards and seven touchdowns, which isn't bad, but you roll in the whole LeSean McCoy legal situation that's going on right now, and he's a player that I'm not touching in any drafts unless he drops into the fifth or sixth round, and he's going in the top 30, so I'm never going to touch him. That's just I'm not going to – I'd rather be out a year early on a player than a year late is how I figure it.
Well, yeah, I'm having a hard time with him as well, especially in the third round. I think that's just too much for him considering. And then when you're looking at his quarterback situation, at least he had Tyrod Taylor, who maybe he wasn't the most accurate intermediate passer, but they still had to respect his running ability. So he couldn't, they could just crowd the box. Well, they can do that with McCarron. Josh Allen has a little bit of skill, but they're not going to be a threat with Josh Allen either. So I totally follow you on that one.
Yeah. Josh Allen. I mean, he's got a cannon in every sense of the word because cannons were notoriously inaccurate. Yeah, right. Yeah. Ooh, baby. That guy can sling it over the mountains, but he's going to need a target as wide as the other side of the mountains to get where he wants it to go. So And there was also research done that running quarterbacks do help the running backs. You know, your Colin Kaepernick's, your RG3s, your Cams, Russell Wilson's, Tyrod Taylor's, they do help the running back. But the quarterbacks there are going to be trash, which is interesting considering that my big breakout or bounce back player is a wide receiver. It's a guy that I believe you once had a bet on regarding him and Julio Jones.
Oh, yes. Kelvin Benjamin.
Kelvin Benjamin, the man who is a wide receiver that is built like a tight end, 6'5", almost 250 pounds. And he is not the best, but he is the best there. They have Zay Jones. They have Corey Coleman now. Zay Jones can't catch. Corey Coleman can't catch without breaking his hand. And last year, they funneled a lot of targets to their tight end, Charles Clay, because Kelvin Benjamin was learning what was going on. Well, guess what? Kelvin Benjamin, not great, but better than Charles Clay. I think he's going to get back to his rookie year in where he gets around the 140, 150 targets. His rookie year, he went for 1,009. And right now he's going as the number 44 wide receiver off the board. Those are top 30 numbers. He'll start for you almost every week. Certainly once you get to the bye weeks, he doesn't have top 10 upside. He doesn't really have top 15 upside, but he's more than guaranteed to return his wide receiver 44 draft stock if you can guarantee his health.
And that's one of the biggest problems that he has too, is that health is always something nagging him or something.
Yeah, he's always, always on the injury report, but he's only missed 2 games, which is kind of crazy. Like, because if you asked me, gun to my head, how many games does Kelvin Benjamin miss, like, a year? I would have said 2 to 3. But in 3 years, he's only missed a couple games. So, and both were with Buffalo last year. But he is always, he's the guy in the post game. You always see him with, you know, the ice pack sling or the giant bags of ice attached to his knees. He's always banged up with something or other. And another thing with him too, that I forgot to say, he did increase his, catch percentage. He went from the low 50s up to the low 60s. He got a lot better, last season, worked on his hands. And, I think he's a great value going, at 112 overall in wide receiver 44.
I like that. That's something, because as you're saying, he's going to be the number one receiver on the team, and he's going to be there catching passes. Someone's got to catch the passes.
Yeah.
And there's no one out there. We don't know what Coleman can do. He's shown some flashes, but you can't really trust him. And Zay Jones, after dropping, I think, everything, after being the catcher out of college, I mean, the dude caught, like, everything in college. He comes into the pros and can't catch anything. And it being 44, I take it.
Yeah. Oh, and Zay Jones had the whole synthetic marijuana, naked, fighting a guy in a hotel hallway deal, jumping out a window. So, you know, him and Martavis should get together and figure out what's going on there. But my sleeper, I'm going to preface this with the world's biggest caveat. Please, this is a plea. I'm down on my hands and knees. Please do not draft anybody from the Buffalo Bills except for Kelvin Benjamin. Unless you're in a very deep league, it's round 15 or 16, and it's like an 18-round league, take a shot on Chris Ivory. Chances are he's going to do nothing, but he's the best shot at a breakout here. And the through line there is he's a pretty good receiving back. He did it in limited time. But if you don't believe in LeSean McCoy, then it's worth a dart throw on Chris Ivory at the end of the draft, because he's the only other game in town. So this is a straight through line from LeSean McCoy to Chris Ivory. I'm not actually recommending him, but there's no value to be gleaned from the Buffalo Bills except for maybe Kelvin Benjamin. Don't touch the quarterbacks. Don't touch the tight ends. Don't touch any of the wide receivers except for Benjamin. And I'm not touching any running backs, but Chris Ivory comes the closest. So he gets the nod. He's the 68th running back off the board. Sure, why not at that price?
Yeah, I was thinking 50, but 68, sure, you know, whatever. Now, who would you draft, McCoy in the fourth round or the last pick of the draft, Ivory.
Oh boy. Can I do the LeBron James? I would never be sitting across from him. Well, I would never draft either of them. I mean, how many rounds is this draft? Are we talking like 16, 17, 18?
Yeah, that works.
Throw me Chris Ivory, because at that point you're talking about like I'm going to take a shot on Chris Ivory or Amara Darbo, or you know, just guys that are fourth wide receivers on the depth chart. I'm going to take the guy who at a position that's extraordinarily fragile, who could fall backwards into 20 touches a game. Because I mean, LeSean McCoy's getting up there in age. It's entirely possible he gets hurt first couple of weeks, because he has that. LeSean McCoy is the king of getting hurt. You think he's done for at least a month, maybe more, and then he's back three or four plays later. He's the king of that. He does that all the time. So he's getting up there in age. McCoy's gonna be, let's see, he's 30. So he might stay down one of these times, and then that'll be Ivory's time to shine. And that is at that draft price, I'd rather have Ivory than LeSean McCoy, because LeSean McCoy is just going to be a headache to deal with. Plus, if I take LeSean McCoy in the fourth round, I can't take Amari Cooper.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good point. Oh, yeah. One more thing too about the Buffalo Bills. Don't forget that their offensive line is missing some key pieces. They lost Ignac Incognito. I think they lost somebody else. So even up front, they're not getting much protection. And when you're talking about missing your guards, your running game's going to suffer.
Yeah, exactly. I am not interested at all. That's going to be a mess. So we're going to move on next back to the NFC East. And you're going to talk about the New York Giants, because I know the alphabet. I have to keep proving it since I put Baltimore last alphabetically last week. So the New York Giants, who's your breakout candidate for them?
So my breakout candidate for the Giants is Evan Ingram. I know it doesn't sound like too much of a breakout considering the year he had leading basically the Giants in receiving, catches, touchdowns. The only thing he didn't lead the team in was yards, and that, interesting enough, went to Sterling Shepard. So, but Ingram just is someone that I think is even going to break out even more so. And that has to do with Saquon Barkley. I think that with the Giants being able to now run the ball, you're going to see more upfront defense going to attack, which is going to leave someone like Evan Ingram pretty much down the seam or in the zone. He can run and play everywhere. He's sort of a tight end wide receiver hybrid, where he's more wide receiver than tight end, which gives Eli Manning just a fantastic weapon to have. I think the only problem that I think I have right now is with Odell Beckham coming back, how much volume is he going to get?
That's what I was worried about, is the volume.
Exactly. So, and then also Barkley can catch passes out of the backfield as well. So I think you're going to see a decrease in volume, but I think what you're going to see is his catches maybe dropping, but his yards and touchdowns increasing because with Barkley, they have a better offense. And with Odell Beckham back in the fold, they have a better offense. That means that they're going to be moving the ball down the field more. So I would say a decrease in receptions, but look for those yards and touchdowns to go up.
So he'll be a less effective overall football player is what you're saying, but because of the touchdowns, he'll take a step forward, which that's something I can see. Target share going down is something that bugs me, but I mean, he didn't get any smaller in the offseason. You know, he's a big guy. They can throw it up in the end zone to him. His draft price just is a little itchy to me, just because if you're not getting one of the big three, or actually big two now, because Zach Ertz has his health problems again. If you're not getting Gronk or Kelsey, waiting, because I think his draft price is a little elevated, but he definitely has a chance of being the new big three. You know, I would not be surprised if he turned in a Travis Kelsey season. So
yeah, I'm actually more worried about Travis Kelce this year than I am Evan Engram. If I had a choice between the two, I'd take Engram just because of a later draft selection, and I think that Kelce isn't going to have the year that he had in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, fair enough. I could see that. New quarterback, new situation around him. But all right, let's move on to your, let's say, sleeper. I'm going to guess. I got a couple sleepers here for the Giants. So there's a little guy named Saquon Barkley, kind of underdrafted. Odell Beckham, not a lot of people know him. Either of those guys?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Shoot. Okay.
But it is a receiver. And the sleeper that I have is Sterling Shepard.
Shep!
And even though his receptions dropped from 65 to 59, his yards per catch went up nearly 2 yards a game, near 12.5 yards, which gave him more yards than the rookie season. So his rookie year, he only had 658 yards. His second year, he had 731. The biggest drop, though, was his touchdowns. It went from 8 to 2. So that's a massive regression. And I think that you're going to see that come up. I really do. I think I see him having more catches, more yards, and definitely more touchdowns. I say he gets 5 touchdowns this year. I know touchdowns are one of those things where it's sort of hard to predict. But at 2 touchdowns, it's like card sharks. We're going to go higher. We're going to go higher. So I'm going to go higher with his touchdowns just because his touchdowns last year were so low. And then if you look at some of his games, oh my goodness, he just blew out the Eagles twice, catching 18 passes for over 200 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had 7 catches in one and 11 in another. And then he also took your 49ers to school too.
That was the only game that CJ Beathard won. Okay. He made it really hard to beat him. They let Sterling Shepard run free as a distraction so C.J. Beathard could get his win.
Is that what it was? And 11 catches, 142 yards in that game.
They felt bad for him.
he needed a pick-me-up, huh?
Yeah, they're just nice guys.
Yeah, they just like those opposing teams. They feel sorry, especially the Giants, how bad they were. So you know, you got to give a little love to your you know teams that you play against every once in a while.
Yeah.
And then you know, for PPR leagues, what I like to look for, especially late in drafts, are slot receivers, and he's the epitome of that. He's the total slot receiver. Unfortunately, I think his volume will be limited with both Engram and OBJ there, of course, and then Barkley as well. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have much of a ceiling, but I just see him just being the sleeper on this team and sort of, I guess, waking up and just, I think this offense is going to be at least average at best. So you're going to see him a lot more active than you saw him last year. And last year really wasn't that bad. So I take him in the 10th round.
Fair enough. All right. Who is your bust?
So my bust is a guy named Saquon Barkley.
All right.
And I'm not a fan of his. I'm a fan of his athleticism and his talent, but what do we really know about this dude that is going to be running behind a really trashy offensive line and is going in the top 5, if not higher, in a lot of drafts, which just makes me scratch my head because I don't get it. I just don't see it. So not only do you have a bad offensive line, he struggled in college. He wasn't always having those bust out games where you would assume he's running like for 200, 150 yards against all these college teams, right? Well, in over half his games, he struggled to rush for 80 yards. So he had in 7 of 13 games, he had less than 80 yards rushing. And we're talking some big time clunkers against teams like Ohio State. So okay, Ohio State has a great defense, so I'm not going to, you know, hold that against him. But Rutgers, Indiana, or other teams, he didn't even muster over 3 yards per carry. So he struggled against a lot of teams in college. He could catch, but I think, as with the other players, his volume is going to be limited. The offense is not the best right now. Can they be good? Yes, but at what we know of them, they're not very good, so that's going to prohibit him being on the field. And even though he's a great talent, I just don't see the repetitions or the opportunities to be there for him to warrant such a high pick, because they're going to be behind in games, and being behind means throwing the ball. And if you're not active in the passing game, then but what do you have? So
he is active in the passing game.
Well,
that's the thing.
He can catch the ball, but they're not going to just dump him off when they're down by 14 points. They're not going to just dump off the ball to him.
Oh, I think they will, because of the trash offensive line that you're talking about. The other opposing teams are going to pin their ears back and try to go after Eli Manning, and he's going to dump it off to Saquon in the flat. And I mean, he does have those receiving skills. I mean, to your point, he didn't rush for, I was looking at the same games that you were. Yes, he did not rush for 80 yards in, what'd you say, 6 of these games?
Seven of 13 games.
But combined, rushing and receiving, it was only 3 games that he didn't hit 80 yards. And so I believe more in Saquon Barkley as a receiving back. I mean, he put up 94 yards against Iowa. Oh my goodness, over 300 yards in one game. I think he just has that blow up potential. But at the same time, this is the same situation that we saw Ezekiel Elliott in a couple years ago, but with a much worse offensive line to go with it.
Yeah. So, well, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he can't catch the ball. He can catch the ball. He's a good receiver out of the backfield. I just don't see, when you're down 14 points, that he's going to be that player active in the passing game. I see him, yeah, on a third down and 3 or something like that, and he's open. Yeah, absolutely. Manning's going to dump off the ball to him. But when you're behind by 14, you need to go downfield a little bit, and I think that's going to take him away from those opportunities.
All right, let's do a little thought experiment. So I'll skip the big four. Obviously, with what you're telling me, you're not taking Saquon Barkley over Gurley, Bell, Elliott, or DJ.
Exactly.
Saquon Barkley or Alvin Kamara?
I take Kamara.
Okay. Barkley or Fournette?
Fournette.
Barkley or Gordon?
Gordon.
All right. Wow. Barkley or Hunt?
Ugh. Hunt.
Okay, so he's down to at least running back 10 for you. Dalvin Cook?
Cook.
Okay, I think we found the dividing line. Saquon Barkley or Jordan Howard?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Barkley over Howard.
That's a huge teardrop right there. So
yeah.
So that you have him as your running back 11, which means you will own 0 shares of Saquon Barkley this year, because he's going within, yeah, he's going within the first 7-8 picks everywhere. So, all right, fair enough.
Don't want any part of him whatsoever.
That's fair enough. You know what? That's sometimes there's players that you're okay being wrong on. You know, you're like, this is what I think, and if I'm wrong, cool, I'm gonna live with it. That's how I was with Ezekiel Elliott his rookie year, because it was the same thing with a better offensive line. But I was like, you know what? I'm not taking a guy who has as many NFL carries as I do with my first overall pick. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
The same way with Fournette last year. So, yeah. I didn't think he was going to score that many touchdowns, because they have Chris Ivory there. And why put your number one running back, rookie running back, in a position to get banged up?
And then ran them all in from like 60 yards out.
So, yeah, that was another thing I didn't expect at all either. So, yeah, So hopefully I'm not wrong on Barkley, but I don't think I am.
Fingers crossed. From Lenny Fournette's, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and one Florida team, we move on to the AFC East, back to the AFC East with another Florida team, the Miami Dolphins. Now, full disclosure, I put together this list about 4 or 5 days ago, and 4 or 5 days ago, my bust was DeVante Parker, Well, since then, he's broken his hand. So I'm looking very smart there that Devontae Parker will be a bust. But when I put it together.
Did he bust his hand?
Yeah, he bust. He literally busted Devontae Parker. He was going as the 101st pick wide receiver 42. He was a trendy sleeper pick. I just never saw it. He was one of these guys that every year there's a ton of hype around them. Every year everybody talks about how great he was in college and that he's on the verge of breaking out. And every year he does nothing. I probably hyped him a little bit. I got aboard the hype train, but things started to get out of control. I think when I got on the hype train, he was like wide receiver 50. And things started to creep up and I hopped off the train. My thing with him is, you know, be realistic to what a player's done in the NFL. Too many people latch on to the college production and think that that's going to translate. I call it Dorial Green Beckham syndrome, because every year fantasy football Twitter was all over Dorial Green Beckham. And every year Dorial Green Beckham, DGB, did less than nothing. And it was never surprising to me. Yeah. So that's my bust pick for the Dolphins. Anything you really disagree with there?
No, I think you're adequately described Devontae Parker with OGB.
That's right. So, all right. And the sleeper is, it's kind of a double whammy. It is whoever ends up manning the slot role between Danny Amendola and Albert Wilson. It's something you're going to want to monitor during the preseason. Danny Amendola, I would not go towards because that man cannot stay healthy to save his life. I would personally go towards Albert Wilson. Neither one is a super jump off the page talent. They have skills, they're quality players, but they each have their faults. But what I'm looking at there is the Jarvis Landry role, the slot receiver that goes 5, 6, 7, 8 yards out, turns around, stands there, and gets the ball thrown his way, and then falls over. That has value. If you do that 7, 8 times a game in PPR, you're looking at 8 yards pop. That's 64 yards plus 8 catches. You're looking at 14.5 points in PPR if they don't score.
No, Marvin Harrison made a career out of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are guys that do this, and people want to talk about how, you know, they're not talented. And it's mostly true of running backs. It's true towards your back end wide receivers. Sometimes opportunity just trumps talent. Jarvis Landry is an amazing wide receiver, but he was used in a way that a worse player could be equally utilized, is probably the best way to put it. Maybe not to the same volume, but to the same role. So whichever one of those guys takes the lead, personally, I would lean towards Albert Wilson. He's going as the 91st wide receiver off the board. So he's not even a guy you have to draft, just a guy to keep on your waiver wire, I guess, Rolodex, a name that if he pops, you can go, okay, you know what? Maybe there's something here because of that Jarvis Landry role. If it is Julian Edelman, just wait 3 weeks because he'll get hurt and then it'll be Albert Wilson. So those are my sleepers. It's a double trouble sleeper. And then my breakout, this guy I've been hyping up. I think he was, when we were doing quizzes as to who the players were, this was one of them. It's Mr. Kenneth Lee Stills Jr.
Yes.
He is at this point he might be the most talented wide receiver on the team with production in the NFL. In some ephemeral, ethereal plane where players were just graded on their potential, Devontae Parker would be the more talented wide receiver. But for actual on the ground NFL production, he has 15 touchdowns in the last couple of years. He has almost 1600 yards combined over the last couple of years, and he's gotten it on, you know, an average of 90 targets. You bump that up, because there's a lot of targets to go around with Jarvis Landry out. You bump that up to give him 125, 130 targets. You're looking at 1,008 probably. And he has gotten close to the yardage before in New Orleans. He got over the touchdowns in 2016, but his average depth of target for his career is over 16. So he is a deep ball guy. He's a guy you only need to take 5, maybe 6 shots with him a game, and he'll get you 50, 60, 70 yards and has a good shot at a score. He is wide receiver 50, going at number 132, and I'm penciling him in. I'm running out of room for all these sleeper wide receivers that I love. Kenny Stills, Michael Gallup, Geronimo Allison. I don't have room for him. I'm going to draft like six running backs with my first six picks just so I can fit all, justify having all these wide receivers on my team.
And I'm the same way too. I think all four of my guys in this division are all wide receivers for sleepers.
Yeah, they're pretty great. So those are the Dolphins. Pretty much all wide receivers that I wanted to talk about there, but let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles, the next team that you're going to need to talk about, and your world champion Philadelphia Eagles. Who is your sleeper?
My sleeper is wide receiver Nelson Agholor.
I
do too. I think he's, after 2 years of just ineptitude, last year he finally got involved, or at least the Frank Reich or whoever masterminded the offense last year got him involved the way he needed to be involved. I also think that part of the reasons why they let Jordan Matthews go was because they found that Agholor was the slot guy and Matthews could only play the slot. So what do you have? You have a better player over another player. You have one slot position available to you. Let the guy go. And so that's my thought. I could be wrong, but I think Agholor had a lot to do with Jordan Matthews being pushed out that door. Go ahead. Were you going to say something, Jeff?
Oh, no. Oh. There was a system glitch.
Oh. Now, playing in the slot, PPR owners, as I mentioned, are key. It's definitely key. In 2017, Agholor caught 62 passes for 768 yards and 8 touchdowns. So he finished as the 22nd fantasy scoring receiver and 8th in touchdowns. So good stuff there. With the offense, the way it clicks, I think that he's going to be involved completely. The only problem is playing the slot, you're limiting yourself to receptions and low yardage. So can he catch 8 touchdowns again out of the slot? That's going to be really tough. I think he's mm-hmm. You're going to definitely see a regression towards that number itself. His receptions and yards may go up, but don't think that his yards will go up and his receptions won't counter that. He's going to have his receptions go up to make his yards go up. So that's where the ceiling comes in. But that offense is awesome. It's very fluid. And just him on the field, because of that situation, you're going to see him getting the opportunities and the volume for the Eagles. And in the 8th round or the 9th round, which he's going in, I'll take it.
Yeah, a lot of his downside, a lot of his potential limited ceiling is really baked into his draft price. It's incredible how Agholor has had the season he had last year, and then just nobody's recognizing what he could do this season. So Agholor, that's a good breakout. And shout out to Waleed on the website, who was mocking me for starting Nelson Agholor, and I said that he was good, and he mocked me some more. So shout out Waleed. Anyways, who is your sleeper for the Philadelphia Eagles world champion?
So that was my sleeper. My breakout.
I'm sorry, breakout
is Jay Ajayi. And
I'm sorry for getting the barely different distinction wrong.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, exactly. All sleepers can be breakouts, and all breakouts can be sleepers. So, exactly. So you know, he struggled last year in Miami, but as soon as he landed in Philadelphia, he was averaging 5.8 yards per carry. He has superior athletic skills. The dude ran for 200 yards in back-to-back games. I think maybe only like two other players in the NFL history ever did that, or some crazy thing.
Yeah, if he's not the only one, it's a very extremely short list.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, top-notch offense. So you're going to see him on the field quite a bit. he should also be the goal line back, so expect touchdowns, especially since Blount isn't there anymore. He's not the best pass catcher, but he can get the job done. Think maybe like Leonard Fournette or Marshawn Lynch. So you're looking at 25, 30 catches out of him. He will have to battle for some playing time. That the running back depth chart for the Eagles is insane. You have Corey Clement. You have Darren Sproles. It just goes Donald Pumphrey. It just goes on and on and on. So that's going to be a little bit of a challenge. And then that knee that he has, it sort of nags on him a little bit. It's been nagging on him since college, where he take two runs and then have to come out of the game because his knee would be jacked up. And then I don't know what they did to get him back in there, but you see him come back in, and that hasn't changed at all. It's a wobbly little knee problem that I think will have troubles with him for the rest of his career. So
that knee, there was a gif going around last season of him running up the sidelines, and that thing was, it looked like it was attached with a rubber band and some bubble gum. It was uncomfortable to watch, and it does make me shy away from him because he could explode any time. But to your point, while he plays, he could be great. And I don't believe in those running backs behind him. I think they will, you know, they'll take some load to start the season. But I think by the end of the season, if he can stay healthy, I think that he's got a nice little season of potential on his hands.
Yeah, most of those guys are third down backs anyway. So
yeah, they kind of fit the same role.
So he's definitely the main back ball carrier there. And then for the bust, I have Alshon Jeffrey. And I think, do you think Jeffrey's too easy to pick the bust? I was thinking about that, and I was like, okay, well, he's going in the sixth round, and that's sort of a good price, but it's been since 2014 since he had a 1,000-yard season. And even though he played a lot of games last season, he's had a history of injuries and has been suspended once for PED use. They have a lot of weapons in that offense. He scored 9 touchdowns last season, but the prior two, he had 6 total in 21 games. So I definitely, to see that he's going to score another 9 touchdowns is probably not realistic. And even though he's a superior athlete with great hands, he just has a hard time being consistent and showing it. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Bears let him just walk, was because he has that great athletic ability, but he's just not consistent enough to be a big time star.
That's fair enough. I mean, he's also already hurt, to your point that he can't stay healthy. He might start the season on the PUP. So he is a player that I was angling towards him, and then the PUP news came out and I'm angling away from him. So it's a good pick. People still see the name Alshon Jeffrey and like a bad boyfriend, they think they can change him. They think this time it'll be different.
Yeah. And I think that's the name recognition is why Aguilar is going so late. It's because not too many people at this point recognize who that is.
Exactly. He doesn't have the big name going with it. So, all righty. I think that puts a nice pin in the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll move on to the New England Patriots. I wonder if there is any game that they played recently. Huh. Patriots and the Eagles. Nope. None come to mind. My bust for the Philadelphia Eagles. My God. My bust for the New England Patriots. I just want to talk about Philly so bad, I guess. and I wanted to angle away from the Pats. My bust is, I'm going to give you 3 numbers, okay?
Tom Brady?
It's not Tom Brady. It's not Tom Brady. I'm off of team hashtag gradual decline. I'm still secretly on it. I'm just not going to publicize it so much. But I'm going to give you 3 numbers here. Actually, I'm going to give you 5 numbers. 0, 4, 32, 77, and 31. Those are the number of games Julian Edelman played last year, the number of games he will be suspended for this year, the number of years he's been on this earth, his ADP overall, and his ADP by wide receiver. He's going as a wide receiver 3. He played no games at all last year because his knee exploded. He's facing a 4-game PED suspension, and he's old as dirt. And Julian Edelman has had a couple good years. Like, let's not, he's been around since 2009, but he was a special teams ace for a long time. He wasn't this, you know, Mr. Dependable, Mr. Great wide receiver until Wes Welker left. He's had 2 seasons of over 1,000 yards. He's had 2 seasons of more than 5 touchdowns. He doesn't necessarily have this track record. While he's on the field, he will probably be Tom Brady's favorite weapon, but that's not guaranteed. And he's going as a starting wide receiver in most leagues. So I want no part of him. It's a pretty simple formula for me. 0 + 4 + 32 equals somebody else's problem. Not touching him anywhere. This is a player that I'm fine being wrong on, but I'm going to bet against a guy who is already 32 years old. He's only slightly younger than me. I'm just angling away from him. It's that simple. There's not a lot of analysis here. He's too old, too broken, and he's going to be suspended for a quarter of the season. So I'm not touching him at all. On the flip side is my breakout candidate for the Patriots. In the first 4 games of the season last year, he averaged a touchdown per game and averaged 53 yards per game. And that was Chris Hogan. You know what? Throw in the 5th game because he scored a touchdown there too. So he's 50 through the 5 games last season, 57 yards, 5 touchdowns. Then he started to get banged up. Then he was in and out of the lineup. And then finally he missed the rest of the season. He's only 29 years old. He'll be 30 partway through the season. And he is going, he is now going ahead of Julian Edelman. So my whole point is blown up. Anyways, Chris Hogan is great. I should have double checked these ADPs because when I started looking at it, Edelman was going first. Chris Hogan is not getting the respect he deserves. He's going to be a top 20 wide receiver because he will get those touchdowns. He will get those touchdowns from 10 yards out. Simple as that. He's going to be the guy, him and Gronk are going to be the guy that Tom Brady looks for in the 10 zone.
Yeah, and I like Hogan a lot too. So I totally agree with you on that. I think Hogan is going to be that receiver that will lead the Patriots in receptions and touchdowns.
He's getting adjusted for his injury last year, and it feels like Julian Edelman isn't. It's in their ADPs. Julian Edelman's getting adjusted for suspension, not his injury. That's why he's wide receiver 31. But my deep sleeper, running back 61, ADP of 197. The last couple of years, there has been a goal line back role. Mike Gillisley sucked at it last year after week one. He scored 3 touchdowns. The year before, LeGarrette Blount won me a fantasy title doing it. The goal line back role is a valuable role in the Patriots offense. And yep. Jeremy Hill is looking like he's going to secure that role. He's completely undrafted. He's a guy that you have to take a flyer on. And if when they get close, it's Rex Burkhead, you cut him. He's a last round pick. But he's the last round pick who has a chance to be a flex option for you, a bye week running back too, week in and week out, that you can feel good about. Because you're going to want to get a piece of the Patriots offense, and this is probably the cheapest piece that can reliably do anything for you.
And Blount was a last pick, if picked at all, when he scored, what was it, 15 touchdowns or whatever?
Yeah. He was begrudgingly taken. He was a double-digit round pick. I think I got him for $1 in auction in the league that I won. So I threw him up for bids and got crickets. I just threw him up for $1 and got crickets, and I ended up with him. And worse things have definitely happened. So, all right. Speaking of crickets, it's time for the Washington football franchise. I don't say their name. But who is let's talk a little bit about him. Sleeper, breakout, bust. Who you want to talk about on this guy?
So we'll just go out with the breakout. And he wasn't going to be a breakout at first, but opportunity presented itself. And now I have him listed as a breakout. And that is Chris Thompson.
Chris Thompson. You're not afraid about him coming back from injury?
No, not necessarily. A broken leg, you know, those kind of things. I'd be more worried if it was an ACL, but because it was a broken leg, I'm not too concerned. I mean, obviously that's a, you know, who wants a broken leg, but I just don't see it being as damaging as probably an ACL. And even ACL nowadays, you see more and more players running backs bouncing back from them as much easier than they used to be career ending. So you know, he's entering his fifth season. Did you know he was in the league that long?
I would have pegged it as third season, actually, but no, I didn't know he was around that long. Did he get practice squatted or something? Or
no, he's been out there for 5 years now and just really hasn't found a role, I guess. But yeah, I was surprised too. I actually thought this was his third year too until I read that it was his year five, and I was like, what? But yeah, so I guess we're thinking the same thing. So last year was definitely his career year. Yeah, as we, you know, can figure that out, considering we didn't even know he was been in the league for 5 years. So
yeah.
So last year, boom. And then in 10 games he played, he averaged over 80 yards from scrimmage. The dude is just fast as lightning. He's an enormous threat in the passing game, as we saw him each time. It seemed like every time he caught the ball, he was going for a touchdown. I like the fact that the way they're using him. I like the fact that he's in a Gruden offense. He's going to be too small to carry a full load, but even when he did carry the ball, and he would average 5.2 yards per carry. So when given that opportunity to get in the backfield and get the handoff, he makes plays happen. That's just how he is. He just makes plays happen. And Gruden is going to put him in a position to not only do well in PPR leagues, but he scored 6 touchdowns in the 10 games he played. So the reason why I say he's a breakout is because, A, he missed 6 games, as you were mentioning, the broken leg. And I would have squashed it if Darius Geis isn't out for the season. But because Darius Geis is now out for the season, that sort of puts the offense back to where it was, resets that offense from week one. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to see a lot of Chris Thompson, as long as he doesn't break his leg again or tear an ACL or whatever. So that's why I think he's a breakout, because a lot of people have him and his ADP way down low because of Darius Geis. Now he's going to get those opportunities. So there you go.
Sounds good to me.
Now with the sleeper, I have Jameson Crowder.
Okay.
He's going in the 8th round. And the reason why I like him a lot is because I think with Alex Smith, he loves those short precision passing, and being in the slot like Jameson Crowder is, I see him just targeting Crowder time after time after time again, just peppering him with passes. Don't look at last year's number because he was dealing with a lot of nagging injuries, especially in the first part of the season. I think in the first 6 games, he was practically invisible. But in the last 10 games he played, he was averaging on pace for just a little over 1,000 yards. So that's sort of where his range is going to be, is around 1,000 yards. I think you're going to see a high regression in touchdowns. You're going to see that come up. And the dude pretty much catches everything. He caught 70% of his passes thrown to him. So that's just,
oh, wow.
Yeah, unreal. Yeah, talking about sticky hands, this dude has glue for hands. The biggest issue, of course, is that he's a small wide receiver who plays in the slot, so his ceiling's not going to be all that great or all that high. It's, you know, going to be limited. And this is the first year with Alex Smith. So I think they're going to mash well, but there's always that chance where Alex Smith and Crowder just aren't on the same page. I think Alex Smith, being the veteran he is, that's not going to happen, but who knows?
Okay, fair enough. Just like Chris Thompson, I have nothing to add. Sounds good to me. Who's going to bust out on Washington?
Please don't hate me, but it's not Alex.
Okay. Oh, it's Jordan Reed.
It's Jordan Reed.
Wrong. Podcast over. I'm out. I'm done.
I'm out of here.
Bye.
Okay, I'm back.
I'm glad I could hold your attention for just a little bit longer. Yeah, I say the question is, can you trust Jordan Reed? I say absolutely not. He missed 10 games last season, and every year he misses time. We know this. Most games he's played is 14 in his career. He's probably a concussion away from retirement, like Steve Young, just one concussion and boom, done. Now, if you want your starting tight end to be available 65% of the time, then yeah, Reed is your guy. And then I was looking at tight ends, and I think we did a pick of poison on this, but Delanie Walker, Kyle Rudolph, Jordan Reed, and Trey Burton are sort of the cluster of that group. And to be honest with you, I'd go all three. Even Trey Burton has a case to make over Jordan Reed. So if you're saying Trey Burton has a case over Jordan Reed, maybe Jordan Reed isn't the guy that should be someone you're looking to draft, and therefore he's my bust.
Maybe you're saying, making a point that Trey Burton has, you know, over Jordan Reed, but I am not, sir. All right. My Jordan Reed love has been outlined fully. I disagree, but we're not going to get into it because we're an hour and 15 minutes into the podcast. We need to get this ball rolling some more. So I completely disagree. You're way wrong. I'm sorry. I hope you guys enjoyed Mike. He made it 10 episodes before he got kicked off.
Gone.
Hey, you know what? 10 episodes is good. That's more than Evan got. He only got on the one. Anyways, my last team, the New York Jets. Here's the thing. The Jets are going to be awful. Take everything I say good about a player here with a grain of salt. A lot of it has to do with their average draft position. That having been said, Isaiah Crowell, I believe he's going to bust. I don't think he's a good running back. I think he had a couple good runs two seasons ago that inflated his average yards per carry, which just sort of carried him along in the zeitgeist, the ether of fantasy football prognosticators. They've given him the benefit of the doubt that he doesn't deserve. He's already had a fancy run in the preseason, but he's going as running back 36. Where's he going to end up? Running back 28 by volume alone? There's Elijah McGuire there. There's Bilal Powell there. It's a bad offense, bad quarterback situation. Although Darnold showed some things. I think his gunslinger mentality is going to end up with far more interceptions than the Jets want this year, and it'll limit the offense. But he showed some things so far in preseason. But I'm fully out on Isaiah Crowell. There's no stats there other than Isaiah Crowell is bad and he's being drafted too high. And you're going to tell me those aren't stats. And to that I say, let me tell you about my sleeper pick.
to be honest with you, I have never liked Crowell.
He's bad. He's not a good running back. He's just, nah, he's junk. So my sleeper pick on the Jets is going to be Quincy Enunwa. And this has a lot to do with his ADP. He's the 83rd wide receiver off the board. And this is, again, like I've said before, not a guy that you're going to want to draft, but a guy that you're going to want to keep on your short list for potential breakouts. He missed all of last season, I believe, with a neck injury. But when we last saw him, he had some ups and downs in his last five or so games, but he torched the Patriots for 109 yards in the score. And the last game we actually saw him on, he was eight targets, five catches, 81 yards. Pretty solid. What I'm betting on here is that he takes over for the Austin Seferian Jenkins role. Last year, he was ASJ was a poor man's Jarvis Landry, where he ran out, turned around, caught the ball, and sort of fell over. And they're going to put a more athletic player in that role. He's right now, he's a backup. He's behind Jermaine Kearse, who I don't believe in. He was on the 49ers, got cut before they had a terrible wide receiver core. He'll play a different role than Anunua. I don't believe in Terrell Pryor. Robbie Anderson will do some stuff, but I think Anunua, as of all the players on this roster, has the biggest chance of being a sleeper. It's not a pick I particularly feel good about, but who am I going to choose? Thomas Rawls?
Yeah.
It's like the Jets are bad. Everybody's bad. He has the deepest ADP that I feel good about potentially putting him on a roster. But the breakout player, the one player that I actually feel kind of good about on this roster is Robbie Anderson. Now, Robbie Anderson, surprisingly, doesn't seem to be facing any sort of suspension for his insane antics. Just absolutely insane antics he had in the offseason where he was speeding. He verbally assaulted a police officer. And I don't think he physically assaulted him, but he screamed at him. He said some heinous things. Mm-hmm. But everything seems to be okay. I don't understand it. But when I think of Robbie Anderson, I think of his four-game stretch last season where he went for – in this four-game stretch, he went for 383 yards, five scores, and he did that on just seven targets a game. He is a deep threat receiver. He is a guy that they'll bomb it out to, and I think that he has a chance to really flash this year. He's not a guy that's going to have consistent week-to-week production. He is very much best set being your third wide receiver. Actually, he's best set being your fourth wide receiver, a guy that you put in your flex spot on bye weeks. But he really has an opportunity to just pop and flash because he can run the deep ball very well. And the insane thing, here's the most insane thing about that stretch, okay? His yards per reception was 19 yards. So you're thinking guys like DeSean Jackson, like Torrey Smith, guys who, what do they have? Legs and no hands, you know, catch rates. And what would you say, what would you guess his catch rate was in that span?
Oh man. I would say 65,
71%.
Oh
yeah. And I bet you only guessed 65 cause I was hyping it up to be high.
Yeah. Well,
he caught 71% of the balls in that span when he was taking seven targets a game and turning them into 96 yards a game. So he has that flash potential, and I'm just banking on that. He also got 10 targets or more one quarter of the time last season. He's pretty much the biggest game in town for their receiving options. So I'm going to lean into it. It's not going to be a good offense. It's a lot like Kelvin Benjamin where the price is right. He's going around Kelvin Benjamin, and out of those two, I'd rather have Robbie Anderson. But the price is right. If he sucks, he sucks. You cut him. You pick up whoever the heck is flashes in the first couple weeks and you move on with your life. But I think he's got some serious breakout potential. And he's going around pick 100 right now.
And he's the only Jet I draft, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
If it was Dynasty League, maybe I'd throw in Darnold, but yeah, it's not a Dynasty situation. So redraft, he's the only guy I would draft.
Me too. Just like Kelvin Benjamin. Out of the AFC East, it's kind of crazy. Two of the teams have combined two players that either one of us would draft, you know, because everything else is a mess. So I think that'll do it. Mike, you have anything you want to add before we take off today?
Yeah. I was looking over some of the Roto-World news, and it looks like Jamal Williams suffered an ankle injury. It's still unknown.
I'm seeing that right now. Yeah, I opened up Twitter to check something, and it's right there in front of me.
So I guess we'll have to find out what's going on with him, but hopefully it's not too serious.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And if it is serious, Ty Montgomery the first couple of weeks. Oh boy,
yeah,
we've seen that show before. So on that wonderful note, thanks everybody for listening. We'll catch you next week where we finish our previews with the AFC South and NFC South, and have a great one.